the most important thing is for me to say, like, how do you experience life? Mm. And for you, what is sacred? For some people, they love their animals, they love their horses, they love their children. What is sacred for you? I think that's the most important. What is holy? And if there's nothing for you to say is sacred, then that's where your work is. You need to find what the sacred is for you and hold on to it, because there's some things in life that are much more important than money. And it's the responsibility of each human being to search for that, not for me to tell you what it is. The purpose of life is for you to find your purpose.
Hello everyone, and welcome to Intimacy with the World podcast. I am Dorita Holm, your host on this show, where we explore what it really means to live a meaningful life. However, before I introduce my guest today, I want to let you know about my new 6-module pre-recorded course called Rewilding the Soul, Restoring Life Force and Connecting to Aliveness Through Nature and Mindfulness. This course is hosted on mastermind.com, and you can find the link for the course in the show notes. This course was originally held live. I mean, I had the students there with me, and it was highly praised, I must say. So check that out. Today, I have the great joy and honor of speaking to John Lockley. John is a traditionally trained South African shaman, or Sangoma, as they are called in the Xhosa language. As John will speak about in our conversation, to become a shaman is not something you really choose. It is a calling that once it becomes strong, you cannot ignore it. And it is well known that if you don't follow the calling, you will actually get sick. And you will only heal once you go into apprenticeship with a shaman. All this happened to John, though his adventurous journey to becoming a Sangoma was additionally complicated by the apartheid system, which was still in place in South Africa when John had his calling. So not until the apartheid system ended did John manage to find his teacher, a well-known Xhosa woman, medicine woman, whom he apprenticed with for 10 years. And that whole journey of becoming a fully trained traditional shaman was a truly epic journey, which John Lockley writes about in his highly praised book, Leopard Warrior, a journey into the African teachings of ancestry, instinct, and dreams. So if you want to hear more about that adventure, then go and get this extraordinary book. And as you will hear in our conversation, John comes across as a truly beautiful, humble, and insightful person. And about his own role in the world, he says this: "My journey is about reconciliation, and part of my job is to help heal the past. When people are more connected with their own spirits, there is less of a desire to destroy or put down another. I don't intend to bring Xhosa or South African shamanistic culture to the West as such, but rather to use its essence, the techniques of prayer, dream work, and connection to nature, to help people connect with their own ancestors and spiritual traditions." So with that as an introduction, I invite you to sit back and enjoy this conversation with John Lockley that starts with him addressing you, the listeners, directly, and then sharing a Sangoma chant, the Umoya, for invoking our own spirit to connect with life.
Hi, everyone. Thank you for listening to this podcast with me and Dorita. And I'm here in South Africa. And I thought I would sing you a chant, one of my favorite chants, and that's called Umoya. Umoya means wind, but it means spirit. And when we're singing that, we are invoking our own spirit. We are invoking our own spirit to connect with life. We are also invoking the Great Spirit to come and be with us. If you listen carefully, you'll hear the remnants of a thunderstorm outside. And thunderstorm has just abated, and you can hear the water as it's feeding the earth. Join me with this chant. Feel your own heartbeat. Feel your breath. And accept yourself. Accept yourself. In South Africa, we talk about umtu gumtu kubuntu, which means we become, a person becomes a person through other people. So basically, we connect to humanity through acts of kindness, through helping one another. However, this journey of connecting with humanity starts with ourselves, starts with us making peace with ourselves. So here we go. Umoyawamu. 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 Abazalibamu. Abazalibamu. Hey, Abazalibam. Hey, Abazalibam. Umoyawamu. 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 Happy Christmas. Thank you.
Hello, John. It's so nice to finally meet you.
Hi, nice to meet you, Dorita.
Yeah. So I'm really excited to have you on the podcast because when I studied anthropology for many years at the university in Oslo, in Norway, we, of course, studied shamanism. And I always knew, as I was reading about the shamanism, it fascinated me, but as I was reading the books, I knew I'm not getting this. So I could go to the exams and I could get good grades because I could say the same things that it said in the books. But at the same time, intuitively, I knew I don't understand this. I really don't know what this is about, you know, but it fascinated me. So I would like to, and I've heard that the principles of shamanism are the same all over the world. What do you think about, like in Australia, in Africa, in South America, in the north of Europe, in Siberia? What do you think about that?
I think, yes, I think it must be like that, you know, otherwise it wouldn't be shamanism. Uh-huh. And it must be like that because we're dealing with the elements, we're dealing with the earth, and shamanism is an earth-based practice, and it's dealing with all the elements. Earth, air, fire, water, ether, and dealing with them in a particular kind of way. And there are similarities throughout all the different cultures in the world. So that's, I find, quite gratifying and, you know, life-affirming in some ways.
Yeah, I find it absolutely fascinating because some of these cultures will not have had contact for 30,000 years. And yet the principles are the same. It kind of gives it a lot of credibility somehow.
Mm. So when you say the principles, do you want to maybe speak about some of these principles and then I can comment about them?
Yeah, I wouldn't know what those common principles are because I don't know that much about shamanism. But what you said about that they're all earth-based, but they're also very much, they also speak a lot about ancestors and spirits.
Yes, I think one of the reasons why they would be the same is because it's a very simple system, really, and it's a system of connecting to life force. So if you take any human being and you want to connect them to life force, then the focus would be, who are you related to? How are you related to the world? So we are related to the world through our breath and through our bones and through our blood. So that's the absolute essence of our life force, is our bones, our blood, and the breath that moves through us. So if you want to help someone with their life force, just that energy inside of them, the first thing you do is you help them to develop a relationship with those elements, the breath, the bones, and the blood. And then my background in meditation is really helpful to help people with their breathing, with meditation. And then the next thing is the bones and the blood. How do you take someone and help them connect to their bones and their blood? Well, it's very simple again. Each person is related to someone else. They're related to their ancestors. They're related to the people who walked before them. Yeah. So then that would be helping people connect to their ancestors, to their bones and their blood. So in that way, all the systems around the world would be very similar. It would just, the differences would come in terms of how do they connect to the people. And they would use different rhythms, different songs, maybe different plants. And but the principle of that connectivity, you can say, would be similar.
Mm. So, for example, you mentioned your Zen practice, that you practiced Zen Buddhism for years. So there we know that the aim of Buddhism is enlightenment. So what could one say that the aim of shamanism is?
Well, they're both the same, actually, but we come across it in a slightly different way, maybe different language. So if we think of enlightenment means to become lighter. Okay, so the job of shamanism is the same, is to become lighter. So how do we become lighter? Well, we give ourselves away in ceremony. We give our ego away in ceremony. So through ceremony of dancing, ceremony of trance dance, ceremony of prayer, of gratitude, we giving ourselves away to our ancestors and the life force that has created us. And through doing that, we develop grace, or we are blessed through grace. The practice often is involving practices that help humble us. For instance, in Buddhism, we would do the three bows to start the practice, and maybe three bows afterwards. And at some point during the practice, you might do intensive bowing, like 108 bows.
Yeah.
And that's to give yourself away, is to inspire humility, so that we can let go the ego and let go the personality and the story. Mm-hmm. Now in shamanic practice, or Sangoma practice from my lineage, we would do a lot of our practices on the ground. Like right now, I'm sitting on the ground. And when I'm doing all my divinations, it's on the ground, because it's actually very comfortable for me on the ground. And then when we are going into deeper practices to invoke the spirits, invoke the nature spirits, invoke our ancestors, to really notch things up a bit, we actually bring ourselves even close to the ground. So my forearms on the ground, and I wrap a blanket around myself, and I really humble myself to the pulse of the earth, to the earth mother. And we are beseeching the ancient ones, beseeching them to come and help us. And we do that through gratitude, through thanking them for this earth walk, through love. And the more we do these ceremonies of giving yourself away in order to receive grace or receive a profound message, then you become lighter. And a lot of the Sangoma practices also involve cleansing, lots of cleansing rituals, which involve plant medicine, which are not hallucinogenic, mostly not hallucinogenic. So plant medicine of washing the body and drinking herbs, with the emphasis on cleansing your spirit and your body so that you become lighter. So from that respect, it's very similar. However, in the shamanic or the Sangoma tradition, We don't make it special in terms of enlightenment. We don't talk about a stage that you need to create or that you need to get to. We don't speak like that. We will just speak about the importance of humility. Mm-hmm. And the word for that in Xhosa and Zulu is tobekile. We will say tobekile balulekileyo. Mm-hmm. Or we could say tobekile onyanisikileyo, meaning humility is very important. Uh-huh. And then we will phrase it by saying that we don't have the answers as Sangomas. We are just messengers. The ones who have the answers are the ancestors and those who have walked before us, who through grace move through us. We are just simple messengers. We don't have the answers. So the top Sangomas and really humble Sangomas would really keep putting that message through to their apprentices. And that's the way I was trained, to always bring the question to the ancient ones, to the ancestors, and allow the message and the answers to come through. So in that way, we don't speak about enlightenment as something to attain, but rather a daily practice of giving yourself away through prayer, ceremony, and humility.
Yeah. You know, just listening to you, I feel I get lighter. Yeah. So I did one of your an online course, pre-recorded course that you have. And in that course, I tried to go through all the exercises and I absolutely loved it. I really liked it. It's a mm-hmm. it's a course that you had with Sounds True. It can be found on the Sounds True an internet site. And there was a lot of emphasis on the place in your body below the belly bottom. Mm-hmm. Which in Zen is the hara, right? Like mm-hmm. connecting, and that's a very a place almost down in your pelvis, which is also very close to the ground. So what's the importance of that? Is that traditional or does that come from your Zen practice?
I think the hara and connecting with the hara is more of a Zen or an Asian or a Buddhist practice. Mm-hmm. And, you know, connecting with your center is very, very important. However, I would also go so far as to say that the true center of the human being is actually the base of the foot. So to connect with the hara, you need to connect with the feet. And when I was doing my Zen training, there was a lot of emphasis on the center, on the hara. However, things only really switch for me in terms of that Kundalini experience when I started dancing in the Sangoma way, because there's the emphasis on the feet pulsing into the ground. Yeah. And then I had this epiphany where I realized that the true center is the base of the foot.
Yeah.
And a lot of people, especially modern people, when they start to get sick or experience soul sickness, mm-hmm. it's because they are not actually massaging the sole of their foot. They're not grounding their energy into the earth. So it's actually more than just a spiritual experience. It's actually a physical experience because they're getting blocked energetically.
Yeah.
So you can work with your center below the belly button all you like. That's wonderful. However, it's the base of the foot that's really going to activate things for you.
Yes, I did take note that in your course, you actually said that you thought that a lot of both psychological problems and maybe physical problems of modern people come from not being grounded enough.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. And yes. How would you, and for you, the grounding is, and you, obviously nowadays we walk with rubber soles and they kind of break, we don't have the connection to the earth when we're wearing shoes like that, or what's your opinion?
Well, I mean, we also have to be practical. I think human beings are very practical creatures, and when you working like I have been in the townships around South Africa and the rural areas, you know, the people are there also very practical. I mean, they use plastic bags sometimes to start fires, you know, and in the West they'd be horrified, you know. Yeah. But it's very practical. There's lots of plastic bags littering the place, and it's like a fire lighter. It's very easy to start a fire. So I'm just giving an example of how human beings, we use what's around us. So, you know, if rubber shoes is what you've got available, then that's what you wear. However, to take the opportunity to take your shoes and socks off and to walk on the earth, and experience the land beneath your feet, I think is a good thing to do. And I think also to make it a meditation and to explore the foot and explore the feet. Uh-huh. Recently, I bought a new pair of shoes, and it's always an experience for me buying shoes because I've got such big feet. And I really like these shoes because they're very close to the earth, and it gives a lot of space for the toes to move. So it's not a mainstream kind of shoe. And that's why the people that designed this particular shoe. And so when I'm walking in these shoes, I feel closer to the ground, and I make it my meditation to actually feel the earth. Because when we are walking, we need to also learn from the animals. The animals are the true gurus of the world, because they are living so close to nature. And many ancient traditions speak about the relationship between the elephant and the human being, because the elephant communicates in two different ways. It communicates through its third eye, through its trunk, and it also communicates in a subterranean way through its feet.
Yeah.
And human beings need to learn from that, because we need to learn to communicate through our feet again. And ancient traditions, for example, the Khoisan and the Bushman people in Southern Africa, that's where they got their downloads from the universe, and their cosmology of the world was through going into trance dance. And it's maintained nowadays that human beings survived the Ice Age from Southern Africa. In the caves near the coast, they survived the Ice Age and then populated the world from there. And how do they do it? Well, they did it through the trance dance, because they discovered fire and they danced around the fire. Then they went into trance, and when they went into trance, they were given information about where to go for medicine, where to go for food, how to survive. And that information was downloaded through them, because they connected to what the yogis speak about as the kundalini energy, that electrical energy, and they connected with it through friction through their feet. So that ability to connect beyond words with the elemental forces of nature comes through the feet. It's communicated through the feet, the whole body, not just from the shoulders up like the modern person. So in order to help the modern person become more intelligent, more intuitive, we have to connect with our feet. And you can do that through yoga, you can do it through Tai Chi, you can do it through just walking on the park, taking your shoes and socks off, or making sure that the shoes that you're wearing, you can actually feel the ground.
Yeah, that's so interesting. I love to hear you speak. Yeah. So when you're speaking about these things, you're speaking about the earth and you're speaking about the elements and you're speaking about the elephant and the true guru being the animals, I would love to hear about when you are out in nature, when you are walking in nature, how do you actually experience the plants and the animals, the earth itself, the water, the ocean, the sun, the moon? How do you experience yourself as a human being in the natural world? What's your experience when you walk around in nature?
Well, I make it my practice when I go for a walk. So yesterday I went for a walk. I did some yoga, and I did some gym exercise, because I think it's important to raise the heartbeat. So that's the first thing. I have a practice of working with my heartbeat. And to work with it, I have to elevate it. So I do some cardiovascular work and some light gym work, and then some yoga. And then I finish off with a walk. And yesterday I was able to get a nice walk in. And when I'm walking, what I try to do is I try not to walk too quickly. I try not to walk fast. So when I'm walking, I also like to make sure that my spine is nice and straight.
Mm-hmm.
And I experiment. I find, you know, I'll walk in a stooped way and I'll see what happens. And then I'll stretch myself up, stretch up, stretch up, and put my feet into the ground and just stretch up like a giraffe. And then placing my feet into the ground and then start to listen through my feet. What I mean by that is bring my awareness and my concentration into my feet and see, can I feel the land changing? Can I feel the undulations of the road?
Mm-hmm.
And as I'm walking, I'll also start to tune into the wind. So what is the wind doing? How it's moving? How is it touching my body?
Mm-hmm.
And then I'll go into the breath. And then I'm moving like that. And then I'll just be watching the birds and just notice the animal life around me.
Yeah.
What kind of birds are around? What's happening to nature around me? When I walk, I don't put anything in my ears. I don't listen to iPod or iPhone or anything like that. Part of my walking is to listen to the land and to tune into my body and see, can I feel my heartbeat? Sometimes I can, sometimes I can't, but what can I tune into? So my breathing and then my feet. And then the next thing which I find really enjoyable is the rhythm. When I'm walking, I like to feel the rhythm of the body, just to feel that movement, that rhythm of the body. And believe it or not, when I do that and I just let go into that rhythm, I can go into a trance. My family have always said I'm very dreamy. Very dreamy. And maybe it's an ability that I have. I can just go into that trance and even my community would say I'm very dreamy, very dozy.
I find that really interesting that you say that, because you emphasize the earthing, the grounding so much, whereas when I hear dreamy, it's more like, you know, moving upwards, you know, but then you emphasize the earthing so much, the grounding. So it's like the balance there. Is that
yes,
right?
Yes. Well, I mean, this is when it gets very interesting. It's like a child and the heartbeat. A child can be lulled by the rhythm of its mother's heart. And in that space, you can see in their eyes, they kind of get all dreamy and they kind of just relax. Now, that is a kind of a, this is what can happen to us when we connect with the earth and we connect with that rhythm. It can be very like soporific, can be very kind of relaxing. So much so for me that I have to, I walk on these quite busy roads sometimes in the rural areas. So I've got one of these anti-reflective jackets, you know, these jackets that you wear, you know, for walking. And it was actually advised by friends of mine, because I, at the moment I'm living in the rural areas of Canada, actually. I'm just about to go back to South Africa, and we get these big trucks.
Yeah.
And when it's snowing and things like that, you have to wear these anti-reflective or these reflective kind of jackets. So I managed to get one of these. And when I got one, I was actually very happy, because then I could really relax with my walking practice and not worry about a car suddenly descending upon me, you know, which can happen really quickly.
Because
if the wind is blowing in a certain direction, you can't hear the cars coming quickly behind you. So I do that knowing also that the walking can put me into that meditative state quite quickly. And it's mostly because when I'm walking, I just relax. I make it my business to relax and to enjoy that movement of the body. And it starts with the crown of the head and with the spine, and then enjoying that feeling of the feet going into the earth. So when I'm saying this to you, I'm also encouraging people who are listening to enjoy your body, enjoy going for walks. You don't have to have a huge, big gym practice and focus on your six pack. You don't need that. What you need is to feel your body touching the earth. And when your feet are touching the earth, imagine your feet are kissing the earth. And it's an intimate experience and it's a joyful experience. Enjoy going for a walk. I love going for a walk. And you look at animals going for walks and children, they love going for walks. When we go for a walk with our little one, all the children in the neighborhood want to come walking with us. Yes. So sometimes I feel like the Pied Piper, go for a walk, and all the kids, they all want to join us going for walks, you know?
Yeah. So when I hear you talking about this connecting to the earth, and I live in the countryside, so lots of trees and animals. I have a horse and two dogs and a cat. And so I really get that, and it's close to my heart. And at the same time, we're in such precarious times with the biosphere and the climate change. And like, it's like the earth is suffering. I often feel it, like the despair of what's happening to the earth. How do you, as somebody who's pretty tuned in to the earth, how do you experience that? Or how do you perceive that? Or what are your thoughts about that?
It's a problem. It is a problem. And it's mostly because people are not listening. Yeah. People not listening.
Yeah.
So part of my work is to inspire people to start listening.
Yeah.
It's very easy to complain about politics and complain about the government and go onto the internet and carry on with that complaining. However, how do we change things?
Yeah.
We only change things through connecting with ourselves, connecting with our own energy inside of us. Saying that to you, my job is to inspire people to listen to themselves, to listen to their heartbeat, listen to the breath going through them, listen to how your feet touch the earth.
Mm.
For me, that's much more effective than telling people how to live.
Totally agree. I couldn't agree more.
And then the next thing is, once you are connected in a joyful way with the way you're touching the earth, noticing how you're touching the earth and noticing what happens when you come home. So for example, how many lights do you have on? Is it necessary to have every single light in the house on? I remember my Zen master, when my first, one of my great teachers that I wrote about, Zen Master Su Bong, and this was in the early 90s, he would say to us, if you want to help the world, turn off the lights at home. You don't need every single light on. And he says, and watch how much toilet paper you use.
Yeah.
These things are very, very, very serious, actually. I'm at home. How many lights are in the house? Do I need every single one on? No, just those lights that are needed. We have them on.
Mm.
Because there's an incredible amount of waste that happens. And if every person could listen to the joy in their body and how their feet are touching the earth, and then just regulate that to make sure that you are touching the earth in a way that feels good physically. So if your shoes aren't fitting properly, change them. Make sure you're comfortable and you're breathing in a good way. And then looking at how you are at home. Do you need every light on? No, you don't. Okay, well then turn those other lights off, or ask your children, guys, you don't need that light on. We're not in the bathroom right now. Just turn the light off. Mm-hmm. And making that a teaching, straight away you are reducing the carbon footprint around you. Mm-hmm. And that's the first thing. And then the next thing is, well, I can't tell you how to live. So you need to look at that yourself.
Yeah, that's important. Yeah, I was wondering, in your course, in your book, you use the word soul, and to me, it's such a, I love the word. Not that I would, if you asked me, well, Dorita, define to me what is the soul, I wouldn't know what to say, you know. But the word is so evocative to me. So, what comes up for you when I say that word, or when you use that word? Connecting to our true soul.
I think the soul for me is that part of us which is immortal, that part of us that survives death. That's the soul. And part of the work, or the Sangoma work, is to help people connect with their soul. And the way we do that is through prayer, is through ceremony, and through dream work. Because when someone is truly dreaming, then they are connected to their soul. And when they are connected to their soul, then they are connected to their humanity. Mm. And in traditional cultures in Southern Africa or South Africa, it was said by the elders that if someone is not dreaming, then they need to speak to the Sangoma and do some cleansing rituals with plants and herbs and prayer and bring back their dreams. Because if they're not dreaming, they're going to have a negative effect on their community. Because each person is connected to the community, but if they are not connected to their soul, if they're not connected to their dreaming inside of them, then they could have a negative impact on their community. So it's seen as a responsibility for a person to bring back their dreaming and their connection to their soul. And they have to be responsible for that.
Yeah.
And take the time to work with a Sangoma, to work with a bit of ritual around ceremony, around praying to their ancestors. Tobekile, the practice of humility, of coming close to the earth. And then the practice of listening to the dreams and calling them to return.
Yeah, that's interesting. You also said that pardon my pronunciation, that the Xhosa people, they only knew in the past, traditionally, they only knew death and old age, not illness. Like they didn't get all those illnesses. And I've heard that from many other indigenous, about other indigenous cultures, that when they live in their traditional way, they don't have cancers, they don't have diabetes, they don't have many of these things. They just know death and old age. So what you were saying there about the shaman making sure that every member of their community is actually connected to their soul, and that if that member is not connected to their soul, we have to make sure that they reconnect, right?
Yes.
So what do you think was the reason that these people didn't get ill? Or still the people who live like that, they still don't get ill, I suppose.
They were listening.
Yeah.
They were listening.
Yeah.
Because we have to remember that the plants have such vitality. There's so much medicine in the natural world. And where I was brought up in South Africa, it's one of the second greatest biospheres in terms of, after the Amazon, in terms of plant medicine. And the job of dreaming and doing ceremony and humbling ourselves is so that we open our consciousness to getting downloads from, you could say, the wisdom keepers or from the spirit world.
Yeah.
And then we dream about the plants. And the plants are shown to us, the plants that we need for healing, to heal the soul, to heal the body. We dream those plants. And I've been very lucky. I have experienced this because I was apprenticed with a very traditional Xhosa teacher. I was taught and apprenticed in a very simple way how to open myself for the plant dreams to come through. And we have to remember, well, that with the plant dreams, you're not going to be shown every single plant there is in the plant kingdom, but you will be shown those plants that can help you connect to the spirit world, that can help you connect your and align your body.
Yeah.
And those are the plants that we work with and that we develop a healing relationship to.
Yeah.
So the practice of aligning your body and your spirit so that you receive these dreams, it takes work.
Yeah.
It takes effort. It's not something that you can just put into your iPhone and then you get a download like that. You have to commit to it. You have to open your senses and you have to have courage and commitment, faith and humility.
Mm-hmm.
To know that you don't have the answers to what's going on,
yeah,
but you are willing to open yourself and explore. And so these are what these ancient teachings are about, and that's why there's a similarity of shamanic wisdom around the world, because they speak about these similar principles of humility, of listening, and of just giving yourself away. And this is something the modern world needs to pay attention to.
Yeah, also the dreams. I mean, what I've read about shamanic traditions in South America and in Australia, the dreams are very important. And that seems to be also one of those principles that are universal in shamanism. And that the dreams will speak to you through, well, I don't know where they come from. But when, for example, you speak about the spirits, that they are very important to connect to the spirits because they're going to tell you things that you need to know. How do you vision that? Like, how would you explain that to a Western person like me? Who are those spirits? What are they? How do you see them?
How do you see spirits?
Or I don't know,
it's a personal experience. It's a personal experience. And if people don't experience life like that, it's quite tricky because when you explain your own personal experience of something, it's private.
Yeah.
You know, it's a private experience. And if someone is not experiencing life like that, then the most important thing is we need to say, like, how do you experience life? Mm-hmm. And for you, what is sacred? For some people, they love their animals, they love their horses, they love their children. What is sacred for you? I think that's the most important. What is holy? And if there's nothing for you to say is sacred, then that's where your work is. You need to find what the sacred is for you and hold on to it, because there's some things in life that are much more important than money. And it's the responsibility of each human being to search for that, not for me to tell you what it is. And I think this is a very important point. You know, in Buddhism, they say the Buddha is not clever. The Buddha is shining. And in Buddhism, they also say the most important thing in Buddhism is for you to find your calling. The purpose of life, the Buddha would say, the purpose of life is for you to find your purpose. And no one can do it for you. And if you're pulling your hair out and you're screaming and shouting and going from one teacher to the next, fair enough. That's part of the journey. And no one can tell you what to do and how to do it. And if you are looking for someone to do that for you, you've missed the point. Life is about an experience. Life is a journey. And if you're feeling the soullessness of life and no magic, then each of us has to go and find the magic. And often finding the magic involves some kind of journey or pilgrimage. And often it will involve listening to the wind, slowing down, watching the animals outside. I've just been here in Canada because of COVID. I wasn't able to go back to South Africa. And now COVID is easing up, so I'm able to go back. And I remember going through this very, very cold winter for me here in Canada. And it was fascinating for me because I saw it as an opportunity to study the world, I mean, to study nature. So there I was indoors and watching the snow outside, snow that I've never seen so much snow in my life. And it was just mind-boggling, but also very magical. Everything's in white.
Yeah.
I'm having my coffee and I'm looking out the window and I'm thinking, oh my goodness, everything is just completely white. Yeah. And then I look and I see a cat just going outside. And I'm fascinated by the stray cats and how they survive. And they're just walking through the snow. I'm fascinated by that.
Yeah.
So I developed this fascination with watching the stray cats, the domestic cats and the strays and how they were surviving and the way they moved. And for me, that's magical. Mm-hmm. The first thing for someone who's struggling with soullessness, is struggling with a lack of magic, is to slow down. Take a breath, know that you're part of the wonder and mystery of life. Mm. And watch the wild ones outside your window. Let them teach you. The cats have just gone past, you know.
Yeah. And also I find that once you start to connect with something sacred, I loved what you said about, well, just ask yourself, what thing is sacred to you? What's magical to you? Maybe one or two or three things. But once you start, maybe you start with one or two things. And then if you start to put your attention on that, that circle will grow of what is sacred to you and what's magical to you. And of course, if you don't slow down and observe and listen, it's going to go by. You're not going to notice.
And I've had conversations with spiritual teachers who are my elders, and I know in South Africa it's very personal, someone's dreams and their spiritual experience. So we don't ask that question because it's very personal. However, where the discussion goes is what gives you joy? And I know that you told me before we started, Dorita, that you interviewed Krishna Das. And Krishna Das, I love Krishna Das, and I love his chanting and as a person, I think he's an amazing person. And if you sit with him and you chat to him, he's a very humble person, and he doesn't put himself on, airs and graces, doesn't put himself on a pedestal, and he will just say chant. And you sit with him and you chant with him, and that's it. That's where he gets his joy, and that's where he gets his medicine. And he's just saying, yeah, try this. But he's also saying you don't have to chant, but this is what he does. So I think the most important thing is each person needs to find how do they connect to the medicine of life? How do you connect to the magic of being alive? And maybe it isn't chanting, maybe it's going for walks and watching the birds. Maybe it is working with animals. I know people love their cats and they love their dogs, and something touches your heart there. So the most important is do what you love and find what you love, find what is sacred for you.
So talking about Krishna Das, who is, world famous in many quarters, and most people will think, oh, he's very special because he's a spiritual master of some kind. So you're a Sangoma, you're a shaman, you're a medicine man, you're a trained medicine man. You've trained for many, many years. You've gone through a lot of hardship, as shamans do. So do you ever feel alone in the world? Because your job is very different from most people that you're going to meet in the town that you're in Canada today. How do you deal with that? How do you see yourself in that way?
Well, firstly, I would say that I'm not different. And yes, I would say I feel alone. I often do feel alone. However, I think a lot of people do. And I get great nourishment from going for a walk, if I'm feeling alone, and just watching the birds and watching the animals. And I have two bird feeders, so I feed the birds. And I get great satisfaction just sitting with the birds and watching them. And then I don't feel so lonely. And in terms of being different to other people, I have to say, yes, my calling is quite unusual. However, it's not special. As soon as we make one profession more special than the next, then we're in trouble. And in South Africa, Sangoma is not special. In fact, a lot of people don't want to become Sangomas, especially in the traditional areas of South Africa, because they know how difficult it is to become a Sangoma, a traditional shaman. It's a calling, but it's a very painful calling because we take on a lot of suffering. And so a lot of people don't want to become Sangomas, whereas when I went overseas into the West, there's this glamorization of shamanism, and it's mostly because of ignorance. People don't know what it is. And so I say to people, are you prepared to take on the suffering of your community? Are you prepared to feel the suffering of an insect and of another human being when they are sick and they're dying? And are you prepared to take it on? And most people say, I'm not really sure. Okay, well, that's what shamanism is. That's what it is. And on a more simple level, it's about being a very refined empath. So when you become very sensitive and you're feeling everything, you can actually become a bit of a pain because you're oversensitive. And a lot of people don't want to be around you because you're too sensitive. I remember when I was growing up with the calling, and we went to go and visit my teacher for the first we went to go visit my parents with my teacher. So my teacher was meeting my parents for the first time. My Xhosa teacher was meeting my parents, and it was a very historic and very special moment. And And I had my good friend who was coming to interpret, and he's a Xhosa man, and his English was impeccable. So he was the great guy to do it. And he's sitting with my dad, and they're having a beer together, and he just turns to my dad. He could just feel my dad's feelings, and he just turned to him and he said, "You know, Peter, none of us want our children or family members to become a Sangoma." And he was like, "Really? Really, Sid?" And he was like, "Yes, Peter, none of us in the community." And my dad like really warmed him straight away. He was like, "Really, why? Why is that, Sid?" And he says, "Because they're too sensitive." And he says, "And they feel everything, and we don't want them to suffer. And sometimes they're just oversensitive, you know, and it's hard to be with them, you know, hard to help them." And yeah. My dad was like, "Yes, I understand."
He knew exactly. But I mean, it's interesting that you say that the people don't want they don't want their children to be Sangomas. But if you have such a powerful calling like you did, I mean, if you don't follow the calling, that's not going to be great either.
No. So it's not something that people are going to glamorize. However, if someone shows the calling and they get sick with it, you know, they get soul sickness, they get physically sick, because we also get physically sick with the calling. Yes. So if someone gets physically sick and they get dreams and it goes on for some time, then of course we want to treat the illness. We want to make sure the person is well. And part of wellness means accepting the calling. So then often the family would come together in the majority of cases and say, "Okay, we accept the calling." So often, this is very interesting now for a Western person, because often the acceptance of a calling is not just the individual accepting the calling, but also your family.
The whole family.
So that's why my teacher had to go to my parents and just say, "I have taken your child on."
Yeah.
As my apprentice,
yeah.
Will you accept me as the teacher as well?
Yes.
And basically, subliminally, will you accept the calling, basically?
Yeah. But and, it also speaks to that interconnectedness.
Yes, yeah. And my parents said, "Yes, we will support John. We will accept the calling." So that's why I was very, very lucky that my parents accepted the calling and accepted me. Because I have come across cases where someone is a Sangoma and they accept the calling, but where the family or the parents, there's not a full acceptance. And that's very, very difficult for people. That's not easy, you know.
Yeah. So I know that you are going back to South Africa now, and you said that you sometimes feel lonely. Do you feel less alone in South Africa? Because it's where you grew up, it's where your Sangoma lineage is, it's where some of your blood lineage is, although I know you have blood lineages in other places as well. Does it feel different to be you in South Africa than in Canada?
I think it will feel different. I do, but I mean, I do have, you know, I will feel probably lonely there in different ways. I think that sense of loneliness is also the sense that a lot of shamans experience, because, you know, a shaman's job is not to be part of the crowd. You know, if you're part of the crowd, then it's hard to listen to spirit.
Yeah.
But when you are on your own, then you can hear the voice of spirit. So in terms of being part of my community and being with my teacher again and my close friends, then yes, that's wonderful. I don't feel lonely in that situation, no. But you know, South Africa is also a difficult place to be.
Yes.
Because it doesn't really fully accept the Sangoma and traditional healers yet, because of apartheid and colonization. There's still a lot of healing that needs to happen where Sangomas are accepted by the mainstream. Right now they're not, okay? So I'm not gonna say that it's easy being a Sangoma in South Africa. It's not, you know? So that's why I say to Western people, my experience of being a traditional African shaman is a painful one.
Yeah.
Because we are not fully accepted in South Africa, and we are not fully accepted internationally either.
Mm.
Part of my work is to spread the correct information about what a Sangoma is, mm-hmm. and how we practice, so that there's less demonization of African spirituality.
Yeah. Yeah, that's beautiful. So I find it very interesting because I've heard you speak the Xhosa language. And to my ear, I don't know whether you have an accent or not while you speak it, but you certainly don't have an English accent when you speak it, because I would have heard that. It sounds so beautiful. So I'm very curious, because I myself speak many languages because I've lived in many places. And I'm curious, when you speak a language that is so different from your own and that is based in such a different culture as South Africa, does that change your perception of life and the world, speaking another language so well?
I think this is where language is very important, because when you speak another language, you also are called to start fresh as a child, you know, and engage with the world with innocence. Because my English ability is at one level, and then my Xhosa ability is not the same as my English, you know. So it's very much my second or third language, my Xhosa, my isiXhosa. So I'm always learning Xhosa, I'm always learning the Xhosa language, and sometimes it's very painful and frustrating, but also very beautiful because it's very humbling. The books that I'm learning are baby books, baby Xhosa, and I'm constantly going to the basics and the foundations of the language constantly, because my friends are mother tongue Xhosa speakers, so they speak it very, very well. So I'm always, I'm not speaking it at the same level as them. So it's very humbling for me to go back into a traditional ceremony where everything's in Xhosa, and I'm struggling to understand the language where I don't struggle in English. You know, everything is easy for me in English because it's my mother tongue. Whereas in isiXhosa, I'm constantly learning, constantly feeling the language. And the way I learned the language was listening, not just to the words, but the way the words are being said, and watching the body language. So my ability and my apprenticeship in Xhosa, or my apprenticeship in shamanism or the Sangoma culture, was very closely connected to the language and having to learn to listen and to watch and observe, because otherwise I wouldn't know what was going on. I had to learn through watching. And then every now and then I would have an interpreter who would explain the ceremony, but they can't explain every single word and every nuance. That is why it was actually a great privilege for me not to have everything in English, because I had to learn the nuance and the feeling and the intonation. Yes. And now friends of mine will say, well, when I work with language linguists in my area, they will say my accent is very traditional. My Xhosa accent is very traditional because I had to mimic my teachers. I had to mimic my friends. And when people hear me speak a few phrases, they don't pick up an accent. However, I have to be humble and say to you that I'm still learning the language. I'm not completely, I'm not close to being mother tongue. I'm still learning the language, and it's good, because it's a good practice for me. It's a good practice, you know.
yeah, absolutely. And I love what you say about you having to pay really close attention, having to really listen, having to really observe and observe the body. And I mean, that in itself is such a great teaching.
It's a dance. Language is a dance. And speaking different languages, I always recommend people, if they want to really engage with their spiritual practice and they're hitting a block, learn another language. Because there's something about learning a language that you have to become a child. You have to learn to listen. You have to learn to mimic. And you have to also let go and surrender and know that there's so much you don't know. My partner is a French speaker. She speaks French, and my family keeps saying to me, oh, how's your French going? My mom and dad would be like, how's your French going? And I'm like, geez, I'm just coming to grips with my isiXhosa, and now I'm having to learn French as well.
lucky you. You get to really develop yourself.
I'll be like, un petit peu, parlez-vous français, un petit peu. And then I speak to my partner's friends in Quebec, and they'll be like, oh, you know, you don't have an accent when you speak French. There are a few phrases, you don't have an accent.
You have no words, but the perfect accent.
I'll have like a couple of phrases, and in those phrases, they'll be like, they'll be so impressed.
Yeah, une baguette, s'il vous plaît.
Yeah. Vous parlez-vous français?
Yeah. Un petit peu. Oui, oui. Oh, John, it's been wonderful meeting you. It's been wonderful speaking to you. I have so much respect and reverence for your work and for your role in the world.
Thank you.
I hope we get to meet sometime. Who knows?
Thank you.
And have a safe and wonderful journey back to South Africa.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you.
I hope you enjoyed this conversation with John Lockley. I came away from the conversation really inspired to connect deeper to my own greater body, the earth, through really feeling into the feet and letting the feet receive the earth, as well as giving myself to the earth. John has lots of offerings on his website, which is johnlockley.com, so do check that out, as well as his book, Leopard Warrior. I also want to offer my own 6-module pre-recorded course called Rewilding the Soul, Restoring Life Force and Connecting to Aliveness Through Nature and Mindfulness. That course is hosted on mastermind.com, and you can find the link for the course in the show notes, as well as the link to my website, doritaholm.com, where you can also schedule a free one-on-one with me if you need some help on your life journey. Thank you so much for listening, and stay tuned for the next episode. Until then, be well.
Happy Christmas.